Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and I'm so glad you could be with us today. Generally, we think that the death of a child is the worst tragedy any of us can face, but the death of a sibling when we are young has to rank pretty high on the list of wrenching tragedies. I have a sister who's only 18 months younger than I am, and I've been close to her all my life. We've never had much in common. Actually, we're almost opposite people. But we have our entire childhood in common. We have all those people, all those experiences, which are unique to us. No one else on earth shares our memories. And we respect the different people we've become. We love and we support one another. And even though I guess that at this point we have trouble really understanding anything about one another, she's a contented grandma. With close siblings, that understanding or even lack of understanding doesn't even matter. It's a deeper bond than that. We're so central to the landscape of one another's lives that from earliest childhood until now, for me to have lost her at any point, even today, would be devastating. How then can I even fathom the tragedy that befell Paula Lenz on a Texas morning in October that's now nearly 35 years in the past? She was just 30. She adored her brother, who was only 4 years younger. They had a sister, but their sister was 10 years younger than Paula. It was really Donnie who shared her childhood. And then came the morning when Donnie was driving to work. He was only 26 years old. And for reasons that can only be guessed, he failed to stop at a rural crossing and his truck collided with the engine of a train. It took Paula more than 3 decades to write her book, which is called Driving into Infinity, Living with My Brother's Spirit. She's unsparing in talking about her grief and the ways that it affected her, but her brother remained so central to her life that instead of being a downer, her book is light and it's very powerful. I met Paula a couple of months ago, and I found her to be such a lovely person and her story to be so compelling that I thought you'd enjoy meeting her. Paula, welcome. I'm so glad you're with us today.
Thank you so much, Roberta. I'm just really happy to have been invited to your show.
I suppose it seems like an honor, but for me, it's more of an honor to have the opportunity to share you with a lot of people that I care about, because I think your story really has to be much more broadly told. We all have these experiences. We lose somebody extremely close to us. And I think what you went through and talk about even 35 years later is very important. Tell us a little about Donnie, though. You were children together. What kind of person was he?
Well, my brother was very outgoing, funny, was just really well-liked by everyone. And, you know, it was, he had a lot of close friends. And with his passing, it was just a huge shock, of course, because it just came out of the blue.
Yeah, just one day, suddenly yes. He's not there anymore. Yes.
Well, and you know, two of us growing up, I mean, as you explained, I was 4 when he was born. And of course, you know, right away, I became known as sister. Everybody in the family started calling me sister after my brother was born. And so, of course, you know, I took on a sense of responsibility, let's say, which kind of carried on as we were growing up, because, you know, he always wanted to go with me in the neighborhood when we were young. And, you know, I was always trying to look out for him. So we had a lot of funny and good childhood experiences. And, you know, as you pointed out, because there was only 4 years difference between us, really all of my childhood memories are with Donnie.
Yes, yes.
you know, by the time my sister was 10 years old, I mean, I was already in college, more than halfway through college. And so, you know, it's just not the same experience with her. And, you know, Donnie and I used to do all kinds of things. You know, some of the funnier memories are like, you know, we would get out there and make mud pies. And when we moved into my dad had inherited his parents' place, and it was a big area. And in the back, they had left over this big cement area that where they had a fire pit. And believe it or not, we made a small fire and we put this grate over it and made mud pies and would bake mud pies and, you know, things like that. Yeah. We would go and fly a kite together. I remember one time we were out in a field and there were some dogs off in the distance. They started chasing us and we were running. My brother's in the back going, "Sister, wait for me." And, oh, you know, yeah. Just so many funny incidents like that. But as he got older, I mean, you know, and had his own friends. And of course, you know, I knew all of them, but Donnie just became, he could have been a comedian. I mean, he was very smart. He went to Texas A&M. Majored in building construction and got his degree in that. But he was just so funny. He could have been a comedian, and he could imitate anybody. And consequently, you know, this made him kind of the center of our family. And when we would get together with friends, because he would spin all these funny stories and do these imitations of people. And literally, I mean, we were just rolling on the floor. It was just so funny. And he was just a good guy too. In the book, there's stories that are related, how he was always helping out his friends. You know, he was never afraid to do work and help them do things. I think they redid some boat together and took that out for water skiing and just any number of kinds of things. You know, he was always willing to help people. And, you know,
so here we are in this situation with this wonderful young man who is the only son. And your parents had divorced, so really he was the only son in two families and clearly treasured. That comes across really, really easily. But you and your sister both had precognitive dreams, right, that something was going to happen to him. What was your dream?
Yes. Well, my dream started in the fall of 1982, and
so that was a year before he died, right?
That was 1 year before he died. And because he died in October of 83, and really in the fall of 82 is when I began to have this recurring dream. And, you know, it was always the same. I would be outside in this expansive field, and you know, there was a large crowd of people who were gathering there, and more people were coming. And, you know, we're just all standing outside, and suddenly someone says, you know, "What is this all about?" And I said, I don't know. And everyone was looking up at the sky, and there suddenly appeared Jesus in the sky. And in the moment when that happened, I just doubled over with this pain, almost falling down to the ground. And this pain that I was experiencing was the worst I had ever known. But it was not physical pain. It was this heartfelt suffering and agony. And as I doubled over with this pain, and I just kept saying, "But it isn't supposed to be this way. I thought the end of the world was supposed to be joyous."
Yes, that's a point, right?
And then, you know, and that's, you know, what we were taught, of course. And then the dream would suddenly end, And I would just be startled awake after every time from this dream. And of course, I had no idea what this dream meant. I'd never really been aware of having any precognitive dreams of any kind. And every time I had this, as it continued to recur, I just thought, what? Why am I having this dream? And my sister, 2 years prior to Donnie's death in 1983, he graduated from A&M in 1981. And my sister had this dream prior to his graduation, which she did not tell me about until after his death. But she dreamed that she was walking across the A&M campus, because she also went there, and there was a phone ringing at a phone booth there, and she answered it. And when she answered it, this woman on the other end said, did you hear what happened today? And she said, no. She said, your brother was killed this morning in an accident. And she was, my sister was screaming at this woman on the other end saying, no, you're lying and all of this. And she just hung up. And after she had that dream, she was afraid. This was a couple of months before Donnie was set to graduate in May of 1981. And she was afraid that this was telling her that something was going to happen to Donnie before he could graduate. But obviously that didn't happen.
So that could have been a direct precognitive dream, and it really sounds like it was. But they got the time wrong, because they're not on our time. Paula lost her brother almost 35 years ago when he was very young. And losing a sibling has to be one of the most, especially if you're close, and they were very close, one of the worst things that can happen. It can destroy families. But in Paula's case, it made something kind of wonderful happen. I found this, because I've had this kind of extraordinary experience, I had my own kind of transformational experience when I was only 8. I get it. I know this was real, but I was in my bedroom at the time. You were driving a car. Please tell us, you know, in some detail, what happened. This was 5 or 6 days, I think, after his death, right? When was this?
Yes. This took place 3 days after his funeral. He was buried on a Sunday. This was a Wednesday. And you know, at the time that my brother was killed, he was actually driving a company truck. And then when, after his funeral, I stayed in our hometown of Bryan, and my husband left me Bryan. He went back to Houston. And so the vehicle I had for use while I was there was actually Donnie's personal small truck. And that day I decided to drive to my grandparents' home, which is about 15 minutes away from where my dad's house was, and take to them some flowers from the funeral. And so I'm on my way, and as I'm driving, all of a sudden I developed 360-degree vision. I could see all around me, and I'm driving, and I'm thinking to myself, what is happening to me? And really, before I could think too much more, I realized that my brother was there, and he was just right by my right shoulder. And I could see him, you know, through this 360-degree vision. He was standing there a little bit behind me with his hand on my shoulder. And he looked like a pattern of light particles. But I knew it was him. I could still see that it was him. And I hear him speaking to me telepathically. And the first thing he said to me was that he did not want me to be sad. He wanted me to know what it was like for him. He said that he was happy. And he explained to me that he was on, these were his words, another plane of being, and that it had simply been his time to go.
Wow.
And, you know, at this point, I began to realize that I was no longer in my body, in the truck driving, but I existed in only a state of consciousness. But I could still see my brother behind me. My brother stayed with me throughout this whole experience. And as I realized I was just consciousness only, I could see this landscape around me. But it looked like just a landscape like you would see on a photo negative or something. And really the landscape itself was not what was important. Because after that, my entire focus became one of just consciousness, and I began experiencing totally infinity and eternity. I felt that with no body, I was not being restricted any longer. And I felt that I was completely one with the universe.
Wow.
And I totally became one with peace, with love, and all the knowledge in the universe. And this peace that came over me, I thought of the Bible verse, you know, the peace that passeth
understanding. All understanding, yes. That's what I thought of, too, when I heard or read your book.
Wow. And it was just unbelievable to me. It was kind of interesting, too. First I felt this peace, and then I felt the knowledge aspect, that I knew everything that had ever transpired throughout time. And then at that point is when the energy of this love, this all-encompassing love that is the universe, that is, you know, the creation and the manifestation of everything in the universe. That's when this love, I just became totally encompassed and one with this love. And I knew that I was one with that, and that everything, everyone and everything, is one with this love. There is no separation of anything from this very powerful love. And I call it in my book spirit, the spirit of universal love, because this love is all-encompassing, caring, and the creative element of the universe.
All right, so let's take apart what happened to you. Number one, you were driving in a car, and you said afterward you actually had made the right turns and done everything while your body kept driving in the direction it was supposed to go, but you weren't even aware of that going on while this was happening?
That's right. I was probably in this state of being for 4 or 5 minutes, and, you know, I totally, to this day, I still have no conscious memory of driving during that time. And actually, when I returned to my body, I realized that I had made a turn onto the roadway already to my grandparents. But
wow.
You know, the other thing that happened was once I experienced all these feelings and knowledge and love and everything, I realized that. And, of course, I knew my brother was still there, and I realized that I didn't care one thing about returning to my body. I just knew I didn't want to go back. And when I began to think like that, I began feeling as though I were rushing, whooshing away in an upward fashion. And at that point, my brother began to exert, I'll say, exert energy on me. And he said to me, no, you can't go yet. It's not your time.
Yeah.
Because I really wanted to just go on to the next level, and, you know, I just didn't want to return. But when that began to happen, after he said that to me, and I felt the energy pushing me back down into my body, and I actually kind of saw my body as I was coming back into it, and I describe it as kind of returning into my body with this thud. And and realizing I had made the turn onto this roadway that led to my grandparents, and I felt very happy, and I felt very warm. In fact, I even looked at myself in the rearview mirror, and I had, it was like my cheeks and stuff were all kind of red, and I just had this. This glow, I guess, from having been through this experience.
All right, now let's take apart the experience a little more. The first thing that happened was you were aware that you had almost panoramic vision, which to me is a very interesting insight, because that was the moment when your non-physical body separated from your physical body. When we are in the afterlife levels, or when we are traveling in an OBE or an NDE, we do have that kind of vision. It's almost panoramic. Uh-huh. So that's the first thing which made me say, okay, this is real. This was very much, and I want everyone to see that there are all kinds of experiences people have that they don't talk about. I have repeatedly talked on this program about my own experiences at the age of 8 and the age of 20. I didn't talk about them until I was in my 40s for the very first time. Paula didn't talk about this either, right? You just don't talk about them, which is why you don't know. I'll bet other of your friends, if you're listening now, other of your friends have had these experiences. They'll open up about them if they trust you to listen. But these happen to everybody. I mean, all the time. Don't you agree? Don't you find that's true?
Yes, yes. But you don't know about it, as you say, because most people don't talk about these things.
Right.
And that is exactly, you know, what happened. Even when I got to my grandparents, even though I told them that I felt like Donnie was happy and okay.
Yes.
And tried to give them some words of comfort, it was as though they did not hear me. Because when you're in a state of grief, you just can't take that in. But I didn't say anything to them about my experience. And, you know, as you say, you go years without saying anything. I would talk to one or two of my very closest friends about some of these things that happened. But that was it. This was not like a common thread of conversation, you know, during my lifetime.
Tell us a little about how you met Dr. Janice Minor Holden. I got it wrong in the beginning. Dr. Janice Minor Holden, who wrote the afterword for the book. And her afterword, frankly, is reason enough, it seems to me, to read the book. She summarizes things beautifully there. How did you meet her?
Well, I think that I believe that it was Spirit who put her in front of me, basically. I actually was trying to get in touch with Dr. Kenneth Ring, and he was a co-founder of the International Association for Near-Death Studies. They created that in 1981. In 1985 is when I found his book called Heading Toward Omega. I was searching for any information I could find on an experience kind of similar to mine, and he included one experience in that book. So I was trying to get in touch with him, and so I looked up online the past presidents of the IAMS group, and I saw her name. She's a professor, and I thought, I'm just going to call her and ask her if she, you know, she must know Dr. Ring. And so I just called her out of the blue. And, you know, most professors are never in their office.
Right.
And, as luck, I'll call it, as luck would have it, she actually answered the phone. So here I am calling her out of the blue. She doesn't know me from Adam. And I tell her who I am, and she, you know, and that I was trying to get in touch with Dr. Ring. And she said, well, you know, explain to me why. And I told her my story, a little bit of it. And she said, you know, you have a very unusual story. She says, yes, you do need to tell this in a book. And we chatted a little more. And she said, I'm not trying to horn in on your book, but she said, I would be willing to write a chapter for your book about the research in relation to your experience. And so she doesn't know me, and right away, you know, we connect. We ended up talking for an hour and a half on that call. So that's really how that whole thing happened. And yes, I actually met her. That was in March of last year. My book came out in September, but I actually finally met her face-to-face at the IANS conference that was in Westminster here in Colorado. But that's really how it happened.
Well, the thing about her is that she had the knowledge and the ability to be able to help you understand what had happened to you, which I think is very important. She also talks about the things that tend to happen to people who have NDDs that also happen to you. And this is from her afterword: a compulsion to read about spiritual matters, a gravitation away from organized religion and toward a deep secular spirituality, an increase in precognitive dreams, electromagnetic effects, like, for example, streetlights going out when you go under them, an ability to see auras. I thought that was a fascinating part of your book, too, the way you sort of learned to see auras, and detecting health issues, and a distinct ongoing sense of connection to something greater. These are experiences which came out of your transpersonal experience, and frankly, they also came out of mine, even though I was so much younger. Tell us about this connection with something greater that you feel.
Well, you know, again, because of my experience, I came to know that there's just no separation and of us from this love, this spirit that is everything. But the other part of that is, and what most people, I think, who are, I'll say, into religion versus spirituality, not that I'm judging, but I'm just pointing out kind of the difference, is that I view that where we are right now, this minute, we are here in this love. It's right here. It's
yes.
Somewhere in the sky, far away. It's not just in another dimension or whatever. It's not somewhere way out there in the universe. It's right here. And I view it as just, what I call it is conscientious consciousness. And that is that every day we need to open ourselves to that realization and open ourselves to connecting and what I call just melding into that spirit that is right here, and allowing that conscious connection every day to bring in good things into our life and make us realize more this whole aspect of love and what we're here to do and accomplish and learn. And so that has been, you know, probably the biggest realization for me after the experience. And so that's a message I do try to get across to people, because there's just so much, I think, disconnect with that.
Yes, especially now there is. And one of the things he said to you, as I recall, was that it had been his time to go. He did say that, right?
Yes, he did. He specifically said that to me, because he wanted me to know that however the accident might have looked, it was just his time to go. And you know, I do talk about the accident, and one of his friends went out there to the site where that happened, and, you know, I kind of go into that in the book, but it was just unbelievable that this kind of thing could happen. And, but, you know, I do believe we all have an end date within our, I guess, our psyche or consciousness, and that it's just, you know, meant to be. Now, of course, that being said, I've read a lot about different NDEs, and some people are given a choice about going back or you know, to Earth or staying in with spirit. So, you know, but for the most part, I do think, you know, we all have an end point there.
Yeah, well, it turns out that, and we're told this by people we used to think were dead, that we usually plan two or three end dates, and we didn't choose to take one. I just think it's interesting that he took one that's so young. Usually when that happens, it's because people have already learned whatever the lesson was they had come in to learn. They don't want to learn anymore because there's, you know, basically they've already done it. And if, it's like getting out of school early. They're very eager to go home once they have learned all that they can in this lifetime. People don't like to hang around and become old. So that brought you peace then about your brother's having gone, right? That made you feel more peaceful about it?
Yes. And although, you know, I have to point out that for that whole day that I had the experience with my brother, I was very much at peace and I was happy. But the very next day, I fell really back into deep grief for him.
Of course.
And that was a... Even though the experience, of course, stuck with me the rest of my life, the grief process that I had to go through was just...
Yes.
Some people are able, who have had these kinds of experiences, are able to, I think, more readily maybe accept the passing. And I don't know, from some of the things I've read, it doesn't seem that some people stay in the grief as long as I did, but it still, the process of grief for me was very difficult. And it took a long time to integrate all of these things into my life. And so you do have people that right away, they seem to move through it more quickly versus others like myself that, you know, you still go through this deep grief process.
Right, right. Yeah, grief is actually a process, which, in case people are interested, it appears that deep grief lasts for about a year. I mean, you lose somebody close to you, you're basically ill during that time.
Yeah. Well, mine seemed to go on for years before I, you know, really could pull myself out of that state of being all the time. And, you know, you mentioned one of the after effects is this being compelled to read.
Yes.
And find out and figure out what happened to you. And, you know, I would point out that, you know, this was the year 1983 when this happened.
And there wasn't much, was there? No, I remember well. I was doing research back then.
There was no internet.
Yeah.
And I just didn't know where to start, but I was very much compelled to just read and read and read. I just searched through spiritual books and bookstores, and I ended up going to Unity Church, and they always had a lending library. And, you know, as I point out in the book, I've just read hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of books.
This is an example of something that can happen in your life, too. We are told when people die prematurely, very prematurely, any time in your early to mid-20s is premature, and certainly children before that, they're nearly always very advanced beings who have come in for a specific purpose, often to help others. And I think he did this for her. They planned it ahead of time. That's why he got to leave. As soon as he knew that he could get her attention and send her life in this direction, he left. Now, do you agree, Paula? What sense do you have about who your brother was in terms of his spiritual development when he was here?
Yes, and I would agree with what you're saying. I feel that my brother is a very powerful spirit. And, you know, because there are a number of after-death communications from him to me, but not just to me, also to my mother and father, my sister, his friends. And, you know, I really feel that he is a very powerful spirit. And, you know, even now, I mean, a couple of days before my book, the manuscript, you know, I was finishing up the manuscript and about to give it to the publisher. And at that time, 2 days before I was handing that over, I had a dream where he actually came back to me. He was a baby. This couple had a baby at this party, and I asked, and when I saw the baby, it looked just like my brother when he was a baby. And I asked if I could hold him, and they said yes. As soon as she gave me the baby, this huge wave of love came over both of us.
Oh, wow.
Looked into his eyes, I knew that this was my brother. And the interesting thing about this dream is I had had dreams where my brother visited with me a couple of times, but I had never had a dream where he was a baby. And again, he looked just like he did when he was a baby from pictures and things. And I surmised that he came to me in that way because he was representing this baby I was getting ready to launch into the world, this book, you know, this new project for me. This was a totally new thing for me. And that he wanted me to know this love, how, you know, again, this love that encompassed both of us. He was wanting to tell me that this was a great thing I was doing. And I do think that this was one of my purposes to come here and to relay all this information about what I've learned and my experiences with him.
Yeah, one of the things that that Dr. Holland talks about is the fact, and we're not going to share with people what these signs were, but she had a whole set of signs. This is a very active spirit. Not long after his own death, he was doing just about everything, moving things in your house, throwing books around, doing all kinds of things. And Dr. Holland gives a nice summary of the things you saw: visual sightings, telepathic communication, electronic manifestations, like you heard your microwave when there was nobody else in the house because he often used it. Mm-hmm. Physical manifestations like photos or furniture having been moved. A lot of that happened. Objects flying off shelves. I mean, these are things which do happen. And again, most people don't talk much about them because for a lot of reasons. One of the things people would wonder would be, well, if he's so active in the world, is he a poltergeist? Did he not transition? The answer to that is no. Our loved ones who are more powerful spiritually can do these things. They tend not to do them if they think they will freak us out. I know a widow once whose husband did all kinds of things. And she told me finally, I knew it was him, but I told him, I can't take it. You have to stop this. Then he stopped giving any. And finally, through a counselor, she was able to tell him what it was okay for him to do. And so he started doing only those things. That's a person who has transitioned. A poltergeist is not like that. It's a poltergeist does random stuff in your house, and maybe you don't even have a dead person associated with it. So, no, this is a transitioned, very powerful being who just wants his sister and loved ones to know, because he did things for others too, right? Now it's just for you.
Yes, he did. You know, he well, for example, I mean, on the day of his death, at the actual moment of his death, I had an experience I was driving. It's so strange, this whole driving thing. this feeling over my heart. I thought I was having a heart attack, actually. But the same thing happened at the same time with Donnie's best friend.
Yes.
At 9 a.m. at the time of the accident, he experienced differently than what I did. But, you know, again, reaching out in various ways to different people, either at the time of his death or afterwards in a lot of different ways, which, as you talk about, are chronicled in my book. But I definitely believe he is a powerful spirit and was actually here to, well, by his leaving, I think he was here to help not just me, but a lot of other people, too.
That's clear. And he can help a lot more people through this book because, you know, having spent my life researching this stuff, I'm convinced all of this is genuine. It's all very consistent with what happens in many, many, many people's lives when they've lost a close loved one. The difference is, of course, he's quite powerful. And it's notable that even though he's been gone from this plane for 35 years, he and his sister are still close and he is still occasionally doing things in her life. So that's how more and more we're learning that if, as long as we're receptive, we can have ongoing communication, ongoing relationships with our loved ones. And I think that's perhaps the most comforting thing that we can take from your book. But it's a very honest book. And as I say, because it is so loving, it really is. I don't think it's a downer. I think it's quite an upper, actually. I think it's the kind of thing people need to read when they have this kind of experience. Do you have a website, Paula?
I do. It's a Wix site, but you can just type in, you know, tinyurl.com/PaulaLenz, all one word. And on my blog there, I do have, you know, recordings and the video from a presentation I did recently. The first page of the website, you know, tells you a little more about the book and that sort of thing.
Okay, now let's say, now Paula, PaulaLenz is your name.
Yes.
And what is the whole website they would put in? Apparently you're part of a larger website?
Yes, I mean, it'll take you to, it's like having just a link, but it's, you know, https://tinyurl.com/PaulaLenz.
Okay, perfect. Well, I've been so glad to have you here. I go every March at this point. I've been going to Colorado, so I hope I'll see you when I'm there, hopefully next year.
Oh, well, that would be great. And I would just like to mention one other thing. Dr. Holden and I'm really thrilled about this. We are going to be, we're speaking together at a presentation at the National IANS Conference at the end of August. So I consider this, you know, 1 year later from having launched my book and suddenly with her, I'm speaking at a national conference. I mean,
that's,
you know,
very exciting. Yes. Great for you.
That's the way spirit works.
IANS.org, I think, is their website. So you can find out how you can meet Paula in person. She's actually a lovely person. You'll be delighted to become her friend. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. I'm really glad you could be with us today. Please never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began and you never will end. And when you really get what that means, wow, it changes your life forever, as Paula Lenz could tell you. Next week, our guest is going to be a little departure. Vincent James is someone I've known for years, and I don't know anybody else quite like him. He is about as visionary and as dedicated as anyone you can imagine, and what he's dedicated to is the power of music. He and his wife are authors of 88-plus Ways Music Can Change Your Life. He's founder of the nonprofit called Keep Music Alive. And his mission is really to promote the value of music for our children's education, for all the kinds of ways that music is used in therapy. Now, we know that music can give you transcendent experiences. Music isn't just entertainment. Music can be extraordinarily powerful. And I want to talk with him about the spiritual aspects of music primarily. So please join us next week for a little departure and let's learn together what a powerful force for good music really can be. This week we've been talking with Paula Lenz. I strongly recommend her book, Driving into Infinity, Living with My Brother's Spirit, especially if, like her, you've lost someone you love. Meanwhile, this is Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality. Please never forget that you in particular, you are a powerful, eternal being, and you in particular are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.